You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
And welcome to the Light Years Podcast. Derek Carr playing the game of his life. And of course, Patrick Mahomes is like, that's cute. I'm still going to win. So anyway, we're recording this at the end.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
Everyone knows the feeling, but yeah. I understand. Andy, how you doing?
You know, pod number 26 of the week. So
We're a daily show now.
We are daily. The daily show with Sam and Andy. And
no one's asked for it, but we're doing it. We have a special guest this week. So from the Blue Wire Network, Dr. Raj, or I guess I'll let you intro yourself on. How would you like to be introed on, Raj?
As a Lakers fan.
Wait, never mind. No guests this week.
Hey, Dr. Raj. Raj is fine. I'm a physiotherapist, expert kind of in sports med. And so, you know, I do a lot of analysis on player injuries. I'm assuming that's why you guys have me on here.
We're having you on to discuss, Dennis Schroeder. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
I'm just giving Raj a hard time here. Raj probably got a hard time here. We tweeted out and shared his video on Clay's injury. Kind of my go-to source anytime there's a sports injury, puts out great videos that kind of break it down for those of us who are not medical professionals to kind of have some semblance of perspective of what we're discussing here. So, so the last week for Warrior fans, kind of rough. Really excited for the draft. Was not expecting to get the Shams notification that Clay has injured himself and subsequently find out he's ruptured his Achilles. So I want to start here. The Warriors said the type of injury he can make a full recovery from. Can you give context to that? Because to me, the Achilles is the scariest injury for a basketball player.
I'd agree with that. Other than like a quad tendon tear that Oladipo had, I'd say Achilles is probably the hardest. And so when they say full recovery, they mean full recovery in terms like functionality. That doesn't mean like he's gonna be back to the player that he was. Full recovery is a medical term for he won't have like long lasting disabling effects. He could be able to live his life. How does that apply to a basketball court? That's a different story.
Damn, that bar is low, right? That bar is low in terms of like, obviously, like you wanted to make a full recovery, but it's, you know, usually you look at like Alex Smith, right? If you hear Alex Smith's getting a full recovery, then you're like, awesome, because it looked like he might have that leg amputated. With Clay, yeah, then, you know, that didn't seem like it was ever the case. So it sounds like he's going to be able to get back to be able to rehab, but like what we've seen in the past, like Rudy Gay, DeMarcus Cousins,
Wesley Matthews,
right? Those guys, are we expecting Clay to be somewhat like that? Because DeMarcus Cousins looks like his career is just about over in terms of being like, actually it was over a couple of years ago in terms of being like a star. Like, what should we expect out of Clay provided he makes that quote unquote full recovery?
Yeah, I think the best example is actually Wes Matthews, just in terms of play style, in terms of, you know, perimeter defender, start, stop. The biggest variable here is the fact that Clay is now coming off the ACL and the Achilles. So let's say he's back in October for start of next season. That's 28 months without basketball. That's a long time to be able to then come back and try to then reacclimate. And so that's really the key question, is how does that layoff set him back? And typically after an Achilles, without any other injury, like all the evidence, the research shows, it takes about over 2 years to get back to pre-injury levels, if ever.
Wow.
Now you combine that with an ACL injury, right? That's the question. That's really the confounding factor in all of this, are both those injuries in succession.
Do you think that ACL, I guess it doesn't matter, but I'm curious. Do you think that ACL kind of caused that Achilles? Like, was it, because it's a different leg. The ACL was a different leg. Right.
Yeah.
It was on the other side. I forget left or right. But like
the novice, I think what Andy's getting at is the novice perspective is he was overcompensating.
Yeah, we're noobs, so we don't know, obviously. Yeah.
No, and that's true to an extent. The noob here is right. And so, ACL injury, it shows that after an ACL injury, after an Achilles injury, any major lower body injury, you have increased injury risk all along your lower body. And so that's inherent. For example, I think there's like a 5% increase in injury risk on the opposite ACL after an ACL injury. Like, mm-hmm. That's obviously the opposite ACL, but it's just showing that even the opposite leg is now more at risk. Just because that's a lower body works, right? It's all, think about it like a chain link fence. When one weakens, the rest takes on more load. Over time, one of those links can break.
We saw that with Jarrett McKinnon, who tore his ACL, tried to come back, and then I don't think he re-tore it, but he was out again, and he was out for like a year.
He had a severe partial. I mean, he had a partial tear, but like you said, like then you have fitness deficits, right? When you haven't played, and that's the thing with Clay, he still hasn't played in a real game for now. What's going to be at least 28 months?
Does the ACL tear prolong the rehab time on the Achilles tear, or is it not really related? I'm just thinking from the perspective of like he was what, 16 months post ACL tear, something in that range. Like he's well beyond it. We're not talking about like in the next 6 months. So
I think if anything, they might just be a little more conservative with him because he has those long lasting fitness deficits, right? His conditioning might be lower, so they might just be a little more conservative. And also something we don't really think about, or lay people don't think about, is the mental component. Having to come back after a major injury, I don't know if any of you guys have gone through like a knee injury or anything, but like you're scared, right? Like you don't know what your body can handle. And a lot of athletes talk about that for a while, like the last hurdle is trusting their body. So now you not only have an ACL, you're dealing with an Achilles too. So that could be an added component for him.
So just superficially, he tore it obviously last Wednesday. That's the 18th. He's getting I don't think he's got surgery yet, but with the Achilles, typically you get surgery. You don't have to wait as long as the ACL, correct?
Yeah, I mean, ACL typically comes with a lot of swelling.
Right.
So you have to wait for that to subside. Achilles doesn't usually have that much swelling.
So I'm sure we'll get some report that he's getting surgery sometime in the next week or two. So let's just assume he's getting surgery end of November, which we're in now. Yeah. What is a realistic timeline to when we can see him on an NBA court? And obviously you talked about 2 years as like a more realistic time frame for him to be back to playing at a higher level, but like just to get back on the court.
I mean, typical return from Achilles is about 9 months. I think Wes got back in about 8 months, if I remember correctly. Rudy Gay was about 8.5. And so
Kobe was seven. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think you could see him back for the start of next season, right? Assuming it's in October.
Sure. Normal timeline.
Right. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah.
So this is something I brought up on the last episode, and it was me just kind of postulating that I don't think we'll ever see Klay Thompson, the player we, you know, knew, the all-star, the playoff, like, you know, one of the better clutch players in the league. I think when he comes back from injury, it's likely he may have to take a much smaller role, like 20-ish minutes. And I only say that because, like, that's what Rudy Gay and Wes Matthews, who are the last two players who tore their Achilles that I can think of, have had to do. Obviously, neither of them were as good as Klay Thompson. But my point is, do you think at this point, like, you know, the days of Klay being a guy who can play 35 minutes per game and, you know, kind of be one of the kind of the workhorse players of your team are just gone?
Unfortunately, yeah. And I mean, that's just based off the players you're talking about. Again, the evidence finds that players who have an Achilles rupture or ACL rupture, he has both, they consistently have less games and minutes played the rest of their careers. So that would be correct. That's what I would think too. So,
whew. But I guess on that, let's take the flip side to this would be, he has probably a better chance of being impactful in a smaller role than ever trying to be the player who played, you know, kind of basically led the Warriors in minutes for years, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think from a minutes workhorse perspective, you definitely are going to see less minutes. I would say around, like, you know, that 25 minute mark is what I'm thinking. Higher impact. The one thing that I said, like in the video, people gave me flack for this. I'm not sure why. He's never really, really relied on his athleticism. Yes, he's athletic, right? But he doesn't really rely on it as much as other players, like say a Westbrook or say a D Rose who tore the ACL, right? Yeah, so that to me is a positive sign for him. He's able to then, even if you watch him defensively, when I watch him, what sets him apart is his ability to read he reads the attack really well, right? That doesn't really require to be the most physically adept player, which but you, of course, you need some physicality, but I think that aspect for him does bode well for him to still have some impact.
Okay. That was what I was going to ask next. So you kind of stole it there because I'm trying to look at it from an optimistic perspective. And I think that's really the only thing that you can say, but does it hurt him more on defense than on offense? Because on offense, it's not like he's going to the rim or he's like, Steph Curry,
He was trying to,
yeah, but it's like now it's even less. But like if Steph had these two injuries, like I would probably be like, ooh, like he might be like, that might be it, right? If he had back to back ACL and Achilles, but with Klay 6'7", he's playing shooting guard. He's primarily the problem, I guess, it would be on defense, but on offense, he should be hopefully about the same, maybe just at 28 minutes a game, 30 minutes instead of like 38 in the playoffs, right? 40.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's two things. One, I would agree it's more defensive because that does require some of like that quick explosion movement, right? But something we've seen, for example, like with Wes Matthews, who I think I was reading like advanced stats, he was considered like the number two premier defender last season. He changed the way he's playing defense. He got stronger and he uses more leverage now. So Klay might have to change some of his defensive technique to go to a less explosive but more kind of leveraging some of his strength aspects more so.
I guess he would be like a roided. He would be like a really elite 3-and-D. I mean, right now, before the injuries, he was like the best 3-and-D guy or like a top three 3-and-D guy. Now it's more like hopefully upper tier, maybe top 20 guy would be what you're looking at, because I'm looking at Rudy Gay's career, right? And I'm like, okay, he can still ball, but he's not.
Not even close. Yeah, so the real issue is consistency. And that's where we're getting at. That's what Sam was getting at with the minutes amount. I think you just have to really use him in spurts in those critical moments and try to, you know, have him play in that way. So he's not going to be that workhorse. He can still be effective, but he won't be, I don't think he'll be that same play.
That's fair. I guess while we have you here, this is wholly depressing, but also just reality. last time we had you on the pod, God, every time we have you on the pod, it's just a depressing subject.
It's KD right? last time.
It really is, man. It really is.
It's the nature of injuries recovery, right?
I think it was Steph.
It was Steph, yeah.
Steph, KD, and now Clay. Thanks, guys. Fucking Warriors fan tape.
Yeah, I was going to say, so Steph, he broke his hand and everything. We haven't seen, or we saw him play one game before the COVID shutdown. Can't really hold that against anyone. Yeah. He should have no issues or anything with his hand or anything, right? We're well beyond that, right?
No, he'll be fine. And the biggest thing with the hand, like, you have to fight some stiffness, but when you have a hand or even a general upper body injury, you can still maintain most of your conditioning. And so that's really the key thing. When you come back from these lower body injuries, is getting that in-game conditioning. Of course, you can't. It's hard to replicate that outside of a game,
right?
But it's still easier than, you know, being like, for example, what Clay after the ACL or with the Achilles. Like, I mean, you're booted up for a while. You're just trying to get back to walking, right? So,
absolutely. All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We have to have you on sometime, not to discuss a catastrophic injury, but in some other context. But we do appreciate it. That was informative.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Football is back in full swing. Well, I mean, Derek Carr playing the game of his life, the Niners defense playing the game of their lives on the biggest stage. Doesn't matter. Going against Patrick Mahomes, Sam, it's not pretty. you might not be at a game this year, but you can be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Promo code BlueWire, betonline.ag. That's BlueWire, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Indeed, 2020 has already shaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates and quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job's criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. Try Indeed out with a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is your best offer available anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, that was a bummer to start the pod with. But I feel like we knew that to a degree. It was just good to, you know, Raj Paul's the best, so.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of those things. If you're a Warriors fan, I think a lot of Warriors fans are kind of talking themselves into the season. I am. I'm talking themselves into the season. And I think it's one of those things where you can't, at a certain point in the Warriors, in this Warriors phase, like, this was going to happen, right? Like, this, the end was going to happen.
Right.
It sucks that it's come a little bit earlier. At least, like, the maybe not the end, but, like, we just fast forwarded a year, right? Like, this was,
and it sucks the way it happened off the court, at least in terms of NBA action. Yeah. And, you know, I do want to say, I do think Clay can be a good player when he comes back, and an impactful one. I just think his role needs to be reimagined, you know? Like, he may be Miami Heat Ray Allen. He may be somewhere in between that and what he used to be. But I think we can't expect him to come back and be game six Clay.
This puts a little bit more pressure on, I think, like, I don't even want to think about Kelly Oubre or Andrew Wiggins. I think this puts pressure a little bit on James Wiseman, not him specifically, but on the fact that he needs to be a very, very good basketball player. I think what they needed him to be was like a solid center, even like 2 years from now, if he was like a solid defensive center,
right, and
finish,
right,
that's fine. I think now, if you think that the Warriors could win another championship in the next 5 years, I think you need James Wiseman to be a lot better than that. Like,
he needs to be more than DeAndre Jordan.
He needs to be more, like, he needs to be better than Miles Turner, even. Like, I don't think if he's Miles Turner that they can win a championship, maybe, but they need him to be better than that. Like a 7'6" wingspan guy, he should be like a defensive player of the year, and then someone that can, like, he doesn't have to get you a bucket, but James Wiseman has to be a guy that could, like, he's a scorer, right? Like, you can pick and pop with him, and he can do a couple moves. Like, he needs to be that guy, and that's where it's like, okay, I don't know if he can get there. To me, I was excited, you know, when they were looking at him, because I was like, oh, he's a perfect fit, like, for the next 3 years.
Right.
And now it's like, you need that perfect fit to be a star.
Yeah, I will say this. I mean, I'm an optimistic guy like you. Well, you're more optimistic than me.
with the Warriors.
Yeah. I don't think all hope's lost. I think what sucks is we both wanted to see them have a shot with the core, the original three, to go at it. And that's not happening this year. So now it's about reassessing our expectations for this year. And I'm looking at the moves that Bob's made, and it's not done yet, but it's infinitely better and more interesting than the roster they brought into last year without Clay. And I think they can absolutely make the playoffs. I think they potentially make some noise in the playoffs. And I think what's most important for this team now is to move this in a positive direction, because as we're seeing in free agency, the Warrior cachet does not carry the weight it used to, because players around the league don't really know what they are right now. It's not that they maybe don't believe in the culture, they don't respect Steph, Clay, and Draymond, but we just watched Marc Gasol go to the Lakers, and there's no doubt in my mind Marc Gasol would be a Warrior if Clay was healthy.
Yeah.
And to me, there's also no doubt in my mind if the Warriors make some noise, if Steph proves – it didn't even prove. If Steph just reminds people who he is as a player, and Wiseman looks promising, he doesn't even need to be that all-star level guy that you're talking about next year. He just needs to look like a guy that people are like, that dude's going to be really good, you know?
Yep.
Then next summer and beyond, they can get back into the mix and get more players, and they might even have a shot to put together a Spurs-type team. Quite frankly, it's kind of what I always thought the direction they were going was. They might have a shot to put together, you know, kind of like the back half of the Spurs dynasty, where everyone wrote them off, and all of a sudden they got Kawhi, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, Tim Duncan's like 100. How's he still good?
Right.
Wait, how is Manu Ginobili still doing this? And you know, they're getting contributions from like Thiago Splitter and Boris Diaw and all this stuff, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, they don't have that singular best player in the league force, but like, they're just so good with so many winning players up and down.
Yeah, the winning players thing is an issue now. I think the free agency problem is that they also can't offer, like, hey, you're going to get 30 minutes a game.
Yeah.
But I think more than that, like, outside of the money, it's also like, let's say, for example, you can get like a Wes Matthews, right?
Right.
Let's say Wes Matthews wants to come to the Warriors. Like, is he getting that many minutes? Because they do have Kelly Oubre. They do have Andrew Wiggins. Like, they do have a Pascal. They kind of have, like, they kind of have a set rotation up in the top seven. And it's like, and then they're in the weird space where it's like, all right, you can't get 30 minutes with the Warriors for sure. And you also can't contend. Like, most players probably think, like, you can't win a championship, which is why, like, Wes Matthews signs for the men, right? Stuff like that. Like even the Bucks are getting some guys because they're like, okay, these guys might be able to contend. So I think they're in a weird position. So I think more importantly, they probably need to figure out, all right, is Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins going to be winning players? Because you just said good winning players. I saw a clip that said Kelly Oubre is like, he's like already thinking about playing beyond just one season, because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Right.
And it's like, can you get these guys to become winning players? And I don't know, but I think that should be the goal. Like, cause if you can get Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre this season to show that they can be part of like a 50 plus win team, then it's like, all right, perfect. Then you can bring Clay in and play him 30 minutes game and be fine.
So let's talk about that then. So last summer we knew Clay wasn't going to play. We kind of had some hopes he would play in the playoffs if the Warriors made it there. You know, Steph breaks his hand in game four, COVID happens, kind of, you know, none of that stuff mattered anymore, right? This year, obviously, they still have Steph and Draymond, and they will define where this team goes. If those guys are locked in, this team is a playoff, they should be in the playoffs. But when I'm looking at it, Kelly Oubre, Andrew Wiggins, and James Wiseman is more exciting from a developmental perspective than D'Angelo Russell, Willie Cauley-Stein, Glenn Robinson III, Alec Burks, and kind of what they ran out there last year. Obviously, they were hard capped last year. This year, Joe Lacob's like, just carte blanche, take my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
One of his best quotes.
Yeah.
But I do think, let's start there. So Kelly Oubre was their first move in the offseason.
I think a fantastic move. Yeah, I think a fantastic move. They obviously paid like $80 million or whatever the money. Everybody knows that. But it doesn't matter because it's just tax payments. Like, what's Lake up? He's just going to pay it. Who cares? So I think if you look at him in a vacuum, he's fine. He's what, 24, 25 years old. He's got a nice shot. He shoots 35%. He's a 7+, I think 7'3" wingspan or something crazy, right?
Yeah, he's
7'4" wingspan, and he's like 6'7". To me, he's like he's a bigger Andrew Wiggins. To me, like that, it feels like to me he's going to play the three, a little bit of the four. Andrew Wiggins going to be the two, a little bit of the three. And I think that's something that you need. Like, I would not have been happy if they had used it on Rudy Gay. Right, yeah. You know what I mean? Like that is literally the player that they shouldn't get, because that tells me he's a better player. I think Rudy Gay may be a better player than Oubre, but Kelly Oubre has a chance to be extremely good on the Warriors. But that's also dependent on what we go back on, Sam. That's also dependent on what the hell is the coaching staff going to do with Kelly Oubre.
So it's worth noting, and that's kind of what's changed. If they had a healthy Clay, I might say Rudy Gay makes more sense because you're trying to win a title this year. Now you're trying to see what you can build to make a move down the line to get back into contention. In which case, someone like Kelly Oubre, who maybe he's not as good as Rudy Gay, maybe he is, but you know, Rudy Gay's 34, Kelly Oubre is 24. One of them is in the twilight of their career playing the smart vet role. The other guy doesn't really know who he is yet. He's just off of his best season with Phoenix. And those type of signings make a lot more sense given where the Warriors are than, you know, even Wes Matthews or Rudy Gay or any of those players would make.
I think what the Warriors should do with someone like Kelly Oubre, I think I don't know if that's why they made the move. To me, it's like they made the move because it's like, well, we can't not use the traded player exception because we're not going to tank and we need to find some talent. And Kelly Oubre is the best option with the traded player exception. You have to play a speed style. Like, that's the only way that they can play basketball. I think with KD, you can play any style you want, right? Like, with KD, I think they play like a pretty, like, whatever. Like, either we're going to run or we're not. And KD doesn't want to run. He's like LeBron. He's like, just slow it down. But it, like, doesn't matter. It's like, you got KD, Steph, Clay. Like, you can play whatever fucking style you want. You're going to score. I think with this team, if you're going to play that same style, if you're going to run that motion, we talked about this before, but now it makes a lot more sense with the players that they sign. You absolutely cannot say, hey, let's slow it down a little bit. Let's make a couple passes. Let's try to figure out let's try to dissect the defense using IQ, right? Because they can't do that anymore. And I think that fits Steph and Draymond. Like, it should be a perfect fit. It should be.
Yeah, once they get over the inevitable feeling out period, this should be, quite frankly, this is a Don Nelson team. This is a long, athletic team who should cause turnovers and should dominate in transition. They might not be the best half-court team in the league, but they should get out there and absolutely own you in transition. The one thing that I'm noticing when I look at this roster compared to last year's roster, this is a pretty big roster. Oubre is a big wing. Wiggins is a big wing. Though, if those are your two starting wings, that's, I mean, maybe only the LA teams have bigger wings. And even then, it's just LeBron and Kawhi who you're, and PG who you're really talking about.
Right.
Most teams you're going up against, they have like a 6'4 guy and a 6'6 guy, not two guys who are 6'8, not two guys with 7+ foot wingspans, not two guys who are that athletic. Does not mean they're great players, but that's tools to work with and they can do some stuff. I actually came across a great quote on Oubre. I remembered this and I had to make sure I wasn't like making this up in my head. You know who really likes Kelly Oubre?
Oh boy.
Kevin Durant. In 2017, on one of the 40 podcasts that KD did with Bill Simmons, he said, "I really like Kelly Oubre. I think he's my favorite bench guy in the league right now. He was playing so hard. He's crashing the offensive boards on every play. He's guarding Chris Paul full court. Like he really thought he could shut down Chris Paul. I know Oubre because he came to my camps a couple of years ago when he was in high school, when he was in college. His confidence level is high. Some of these young cats that come into the league, they got super confidence, uber confidence, and then they just go through the motion. They're just too cool. But he has a little, he has some dog in him. He might foul you hard. That's how I know actually if a young guy really wants it. They foul you hard and play physical. I was playing against him and he fouled me hard. And I'm like, I like that. I like that you care because a lot of these cats don't care about the game. And honestly, I watched a decent amount of the Suns last year. That's kind of the best way to sum up Kelly Oubre. Like when he makes mistakes, it's mistakes from trying too hard. You don't have to worry about him being scared. You're almost worried about him thinking he's maybe better than he is.
So I think the difference between, because I think there's a lot of similarities with Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre in terms of there is a lot of talent there. And it's like, well, they could be Paul George, but I think you and I agree that those two guys will never be Paul George.
They'll never shoot it like Paul George.
Yeah, and I think there was even a Jaylen Brown comparison from one of our Twitter goons. And I think comparison being that, hey, super talented people, but Jaylen Brown was in a great situation. Wiggins and Oubre were not. And to me, you never know. Some of that's mental. I think KD makes a great point. The difference between Wiggins and Oubre, though, if Wiggins is someone that plays hard and mistakes playing hard, Andrew Wiggins is not that guy, right? Andrew Wiggins is, he should play harder and try to make.
You always feel like he's not playing hard enough. You always feel like he can do more.
Yeah. And then, so that's like a, that's an interesting perspective. I think that's, to me, it feels like a lot of this is on Ron Adams and Steve Kerr. A lot of this, because I think Steph Curry is going to play how he's going to play. He's going to make people better. Draymond Green is going to make people better. He will find them for shots. He'll make them better on defense. But it's like, what? Where is Steve Kerr playing Kelly Oubre? Where is Steve Kerr playing Andrew Wiggins? Is Kelly Oubre going to be stuck at the three? Because I think he could be a very good four in small ball lineups with Draymond Green, maybe in the second unit. Right, like I think that will unlock a lot of what makes the Warriors good, and then you throw in Brad Wanamaker, Ken Bazemore, which we'll get to here on this podcast. But like, how are you going to use guys like that? Because if they're going to play hard and make mistakes, you want to put them in a situation where that's good. Whereas what we've seen in the past couple of years, if Kelly Oubre is put in a position where he's making mistakes passing the ball, Sam, then I think this signing doesn't matter. Then why sign him? What's the point?
Yeah, so I want to break this down. So Oubre was in DC for a while, and he never really got a chance to start. They had Bradley Beal and Otto Porter ahead of him. He gets traded to Phoenix. He plays 96 games for the Suns the last year and a half. Obviously, COVID cut one season short, and then he just played like a quarter of a season with Phoenix post-trade. In that period of time, he averaged 18.6 rebounds. He shot about 52% on two-pointers and 34% on three-pointers. You've noted it. His shot's prettier than his percentage. It makes you think that the shot's not broken. It's definitely not broken. I think it can be a little better. And the one thing that stands out for me is for a guy who maybe people assume is one way, he plays the opposite way. Like he's hyperactive. He gets a lot of points off cuts. He gets a lot of points off of just being active, hitting the glass. And I think that energy level will be infectious because when I look at this Warrior team, Draymond and Steph are still two of the smartest players in the league. You don't need Kelly Oubre to be a point forward. You need Kelly Oubre to move off of them. And, oh, wow, he has 20 points on 13 shots, and he got it mostly off of cutting off ball, running the floor in transition, dunking putbacks, and hitting a few spot-ups.
I keep putting these guys together, like Wiggins and Oubre, but it's like these guys average 20 points in pretty shitty situations. Like, even if they're, oh, even if you make the case that they're an okay situation because these guys are getting volume, right? It's like, all right, they got 20 points, right, but these guys are getting volume. There's no better situation than playing next to Steph and Draymond. Obviously, you want Clay. You sure. want Clay. That's more spacing. So there's going to be a little less spacing with a starting lineup of Steph, Wiggins, Oubre, Draymond, and Wiseman. Like, I don't know how much spacing that is, but it's certainly better than like the start than the small ball lineup.
And more than anything, you're talking about one of the best scorers of all time who attracts more attention. Like, yep. How many players in the NBA attract the attention Steph does right now? LeBron and Harden, maybe? That's it. Like, those are the only guys who you can think of who will get 2 to 3 defenders on them at all times. Like, even playing with Karl-Anthony Towns, which Wiggins did, teams aren't doubling and tripling Towns the way they do Steph.
Yeah. I think Dame is probably a good comparison.
Right.
Like, he's one guy there. But then it's like, also, Steph is a lot better than Dame in terms of just straight shooting, right? We're not even talking about the off-ball stuff. 20 points per game from these guys that were in mediocre situations. I think that's a very, that's a telling sign. Obviously, you can look at efficiency, you can look at all these things, but it's like sure. 20 points is 20 points. 20 points is 20 points.
There are tools there.
Yeah, it's just how they maximize those tools. I'm excited to see the way that they play with those guys. Like you said, it has to be Nelly Ball, though. The difference is here, though, that James Wiseman is 7'6 wingspan. He's 7'2
right.
or whatever.
We haven't even gotten to Wiseman, really.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, you can play Nelly Ball. Nelly Ball would probably be Draymond at the 5 for 30 minutes a game, right? That would be Nelly Ball. But this is Nelly Ball with a guy that can get up the floor faster than I think any other big in the league right now outside of like AD.
Yeah, so that's the thing I'm looking at. You got Steph and Draymond who are proven high IQ winners. One is the greatest shooter of all time. One is the greatest glue guy of all time. I don't even know how to describe Draymond.
Right. Like, that's a good one. Yeah.
He's just the Draymond in Fast Break, too, is also one of the best ever to do that. Yep. And now instead of putting D'Angelo Russell in kind of, you know, Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson, these guys around him, you're putting guys with higher potential around them. Maybe not as good, maybe better. It's unclear, but it's giving the coaching staff, it's giving Ron Adams some really interesting players to try to develop. It's giving Steve Kerr some really interesting players to develop. It's giving the whole staff a higher ceiling than what they came into last season with.
Yeah, it's I find it exciting because like they've never had this type of length and athleticism. I think Bob Myers said at the beginning of the offseason, like, hey, we're low small. Hey, Lacob said it on our podcast, like, hey, we need some more size. Size doesn't mean get 5 centers, although they have 5 centers, and they tried to get Marc Gasol, right?
And but it also doesn't mean just go get like Enes Kanter, who's big but maybe not fast.
Yeah, and it's like get these guys that are long. Now, I think what the Warriors think here, and let's get into this because I think the Warriors think that they can fix a lot of the other teams who have these talented players, but they're not using them right. I think the Warriors think it's a market inefficiency by saying, let's get Wiggins and let's get Oubre because these guys aren't going to be good, but these guys will be good with Kerr, with Steph, with Draymond. And while that's great, Sam, I think there should be a part of them that should think about, hey, why don't you just get these players yourself? Because now you're paying Oubre $14 million and you're paying Wiggins $30 million. And it's like, yeah, okay. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you can get these guys and they're in shitty situations and you can get them better. But for the price that you're paying for these guys, they should already be that good. Whereas like, why don't you just get a guy like, I come back to my favorite player, OG Anunoby. It's right. Like, why don't you just get a guy like that? And then that way you can develop him and then he can cost whatever he costs. And then you can pay him later on instead of like, now you're paying him and you better hope that he's good.
Well, that's a scouting conversation, which is a completely another podcast, and I'm sure we'll do it next episode.
Yeah.
But I mean, you are correct that they're kind of paying for their mess ups in scouting over the past few years. They wouldn't have to pay Oubre and Andrew Wiggins the amount of money they did if they could scout
a Kevin Herter at the 20th pick, if they could scout an OG Anunoby at the 20-something pick, if they could even scout, like, this guy's not nearly as good as those guys, but Kyle Kuzma was the 27th pick overall. Would you rather have Kyle Kuzma or Jacob Evans?
Right.
Or, right. You know, it's like, so they're
paying. I saw DeAnthony Melton got like 30 mil, right? Like it's.
Yeah, what? they're paying to a degree for their mistakes in the scouting cycle. And, you know, that's fine. I think from a Warrior fan perspective, I like the fact that they're at least willing to pay for it, because you could have the flip side, which is like, well, we're just going to keep drafting and trusting that we won't mess up next time. And in the meantime, you guys are going to get to watch a bunch of 6'4 dudes who are not athletic enough, and it's going to really suck.
Yeah, I think that's the fear. But the good thing is, like, they can pay. They can pay. I know you've made the Giants comparisons,
right?
To where it's like now you're paying, but it's like the Giants were paying for proven players. And those players just really fell apart and they weren't that good anywhere. Anyway, I think the Warriors are doing something a little bit different. There's a lot more talent here. There's a lot more upside here. But they're banking on, that's what I'm saying. Like they're banking on these guys to be good, Sam. Like it's not the way you want to build a team.
You do bring up a good point. Oubre's 24. Evan Longoria was 33. You know, like it's a little like the Warriors, if it was a full Giants comparison, the Warriors would have got Rudy Gay and like banked on the fact that they could like magically.
Yeah. Yeah. So now though, I think it does come down to one thing, because I think the Giants, I mean, their scouting was trash and they didn't have a farm system. What the Warriors, they had pretty much like a godsend. It's not a godsend. Steph broke his hand. Klay tore his ACL. So it's not a godsend. But take that out, and they got a godsend with a number two pick. And they got, in my opinion, the guy with the highest floor and the highest ceiling in the draft.
Right.
And you better, like they better figure out how to develop James Wiseman.
They better be right. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't have to be Chris Bosh. He doesn't have to be Tim Duncan. David Robinson. He doesn't have to be that guy. That's too much. That's too much pressure. Like nobody thinks that James Wiseman is going to be that guy. But he better not be. Help me out here. He better
Willie
not
Cauley be. Stein?
Yeah.
Another big man with the same size and athleticism, but just that's about where the comparison ends.
because you know what? I don't know if I would blame James Wiseman for that. I think for me, it's like Steve Kerr, what happened? How can James Wiseman become Willie Cauley Stein, right? Because he has the tools and he's on a team that has Steph Curry and Draymond Green. Willie Cauley Stein went to, where did he go, Sacramento? He was in no position to succeed, and he might not have ever succeeded. But James Wiseman better be at least a very good basketball player, at least. And that's going to be on the Warriors staff.
Definitely. All right, let's talk about, they made two other signings, at least as we're recording this at 9 p.m. on Sunday night. Brad Wanamaker and Kent Bazemore. Let's start on Wanamaker. So that one caught me a little off guard.
Yeah, it did.
31-year-old point guard, but he is a good player. And I actually think we can talk about them in the same vein. Obviously, Warrior fans are going to be much more familiar with Kent Bazemore because he played for the Warriors a while back. And, you know, he's a fun guy and he fits everything. They both kind of fit the profile of older vets the Warriors are hoping can potentially help mentor younger players. Yes. Obviously, you have Steph and Draymond. But if we look at the rest of the roster, I'm looking at right now, Eric Paschal's in year two. He's 24. Andrew Wiggins, 25. Kelly Oubre is 24. Jordan Poole is 21. James Wiseman, who's the most important player on this roster now, he's, in my opinion, he's more important than Steph. Mm-hmm. Not because he's better, but because what he does matters more to the trajectory of
the team. He is the pivot point to the next 5 years. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. He's 19. They need to, quote unquote, have the right culture. And I do believe they can't just have Steph, Draymond, and 13 kids under 25, because Steph's a good leader, but you know, Steph can't mentor 12 kids at once.
And Steph's also a good leader amongst men. These guys aren't men. Like in basketball terms, obviously, like,
correct.
Right. Walks in the room and he's like 6'7". Like, he's going to make me and you look like children. Although you're like 6'3". So yeah, right there, you're Steph's height. But he just can't. Like, there's no way unless he has that LeBron style, right? Where LeBron's a different, like, Steph and LeBron are different. LeBron is like, you better do what the fuck I want or I'm setting your ass out.
Hey, even LeBron, has LeBron had success with younger players? No. Yeah. He has success leading. That Laker team is not exactly filled with children. Like, Kyle Kuzma's 25 or 26, and everyone else is like 30.
Nobody can. You can't expect Steph and Draymond to do that. And so I think those are great signings. I also think, now I'm going to be honest with you, didn't watch much Brad Wanamaker. But if he's looking, I didn't like the fact that they used a part of the mid-level exception for that, Sam. That tells me they still have $3 million left, but I don't know if they're going to get anyone at $3 million. Like, are they just using the MLE on Brad Wanamaker? I don't know. And then you got Baines is gone, Gasol is gone, but I think Baines was never going to sign for $5 million. And then Gasol is like, how much did he sign for? He just wasn't ever going to go to the Warriors because he wants to win a championship.
Yeah, the Gasol is really a reminder to Warrior fans that, like, the rest of the league kind of needs to see what the Warriors do before they put them in that conversation of teams I'll take a discount for.
Yep. I think that saveable player exception, they're obviously not going to use it before the season starts. I think they have until April, I believe. Correct me there. But I think that's something that they're going to use if they are the 5 seed. Let's say they're the 5 seed, Sam, with about 20 games left or whatever, however many games left is on the schedule.
Even if they're the 7 seed, even if they're like in the lower half of the playoffs and they need a player to push themselves higher.
Yep. $9 million. Yeah. Like $9 million. Like, the obvious name is like PJ Tucker. Like, let's say they're the 6-7 seed and they're like, well, we can get PJ Tucker. We can probably bump ourselves to like the 4-5 seed and we're going to be a problem in the postseason. Like, to me, that's like, you're not looking to win a championship, but you want to. I think the goal is probably to get to the Western Conference Finals. If I were the Warriors, like, a realistic, even that's a stretch, right? But I think that's what the $9 million is for. I'd be very curious what they use the rest of the taxpayer mid level. Sam, like, I don't.
You mean bring back Glenn Robinson? Third,
I think that would be a great move. Again, you're at this point, there's no more upside left out there. I don't think there's much upside left out there.
Glenn Robinson the third is only 26.
He seems like he's finished and polished. And like, you're looking to develop those three guys, Wiseman, Oubre, Wiggins. Those are the guys that you need to build. And Smiley Gage. I mean, obviously, like, you're looking to build those guys. You're looking to build those guys. And I think Wanamaker or Ken Bazemore's case, like, that's like, that's the people that you need, because also the Warriors are going to have some shitty games and some shitty stretches. Kenny Bazemore is the greatest bench celebration player of all time. Also, I'm pretty sure he signed because he's Steph's boy. So that's the other thing. But he is a decent enough basketball player. I mean, and look, it's a vet min, right? Like, you're not really going to get anything better than Ken Bazemore. So I think those were good signings. Those were good signings. I don't think the Warriors did anything wrong. I don't think they could have done anything better. I think some people are like, oh, how come the Warriors aren't doing this? How come they aren't doing that? It's like, well, I don't think they could have done anything, Sam. Like, were they supposed to sign Serge Ibaka, who got like a discount? I mean, he signed like 2 years for 19 mil, but it's like, how could the Warriors have gotten Serge Ibaka? There's no way.
Yeah, another player I think they may have had a shot at before Clay went down. And, you know, once Clay went down, the trajectory changes. This team's kind of thinking more about, like, can we make noise and remind people that this is still a top destination? And then we go from there.
Yeah. So all in all, I think it's a good offseason. I think maybe there's a couple moves left to make. I think maybe they have a couple roster spots that they can build out there. I think Michael Mulder is someone that I would hate to see gone. I think Juan Toscano-Anderson and Kai Bowman, to me, is like, they're not.
Kai's really, already gone. So
he's gone, right? But like, to me, it's like, I don't know if I care if they're on the team anymore. Because it's like, Kai Bowman's like, all right, he might be an NBA player, but I'm a dozen. And then Toscano-Anderson is like, he just has no shot. It's like, there's just nothing there. Mike Mulder is someone that can shoot, presumably, even though he shot like 30%, and he has some length. So it's like, that could be a guy. I would hate to see him go. But that's about it. It's like, there's really nothing else they could do here. Like, you lost Clay, you lost your leverage.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to read the roster out to you right now. In the backcourt, you have Steph. Behind him, you have Wanamaker and Jordan Poole. You also have Bazemore and Damian Lee. That's 5 guards there. Bazemore is obviously long enough to guard wings.
He could go
Wanamaker. Wanamaker can play multiple guard positions. Jordan Poole's to be seen. Damian Lee going to give you some energy scoring here and there.
Yep.
in terms of pure bigger wings, they have Oubre and Wiggins at the kind of 3-4 position. They have Draymond and Pascal. And then at the center position, Wiseman, Looney, who we haven't really talked about, but hopefully he's healthy, Marquise Chris, who was productive for them last year, and Smiley Geach. So what are you looking for them to do to round out this roster?
How many spots are left, Sam? There.
2, 3, 4. I think they have at least 2 spots, if not 3. So it depends if they want to waive Damian Lee because he's not guaranteed. They could do some things there, but let's say 2 spots. You got 2 roster spots.
Yeah, obviously wing, right? Like Glenn Robinson III, he loves the Warriors. He loves Kerr. Like, he loves that system.
He's still got a little upside. He's not going to be a star, but he's got upside to be a productive player.
I would be very happy with Glenn Robinson III. That's an easy pick there, and I think I would probably give more than a 50% chance that he signs again with the Warriors. He's probably trying to get a little bit more money. But I think that's a good signing. You may be even closing with him if the night calls for it. I think you want that. And then you want like a veteran big. All the veteran bigs are gone. So there's really like nothing out there that you can get. But like the Zaza type is probably someone that you want now, because you're not getting Gasol. You're not getting Ibaka. You're not even getting Aaron Baines, right? But that's probably like the 2 things that you want from this team. Because let's say, for example, James Wiseman just isn't effective for them. He's a fucking rookie. So it's like,
we haven't mentioned this. He's pretty physically developed for 19, but that's for 19. I don't know that he's ready to play 30 minutes a game against Jokic, Steven Adams. And, you know, I can just keep going down the list. Like, you might be just setting them up for failure. So they do need someone else, if nothing else, just to eat minutes.
Yeah. And then Looney, it's like, all right, like, yeah, he can eat some maybe. I think another big piece here is Eric Pascal, Sam. Eric Pascal has to be, for them to be like a very good regular season basketball team, Eric Pascal has to be a very good basketball player. And it's like not really hard analysis. This is what people come to the Light Years podcast for. But like they... Right. Like it's, but it's also Eric Pascal has to be good. Like he does. He has to be better than he was last season. And that's another guy that has that upside and that has that, like, can Steve Kerr and Rod Adams get Eric Pascal to be a good defender and a shooter? Like, those are the things where you're like, all right, can Eric Pascal get there? He already has last season. He's been he's going to be an NBA player. But I think me and you think he's more of like an NBA player in terms of like, yeah, he'd be good on the Memphis Grizzlies or like the Atlanta. Right. Like, no, actually, you know what? The New York Knicks. Like, if he was on the New York Knicks, like, they would love him. He would average like 18 points a game. They'd be like, oh my God, Eric Pascal's this guy, like, blah, blah, blah. But with the Warriors, it's like, yeah, the way he scores 18 points is not the way that he's not going to score. And that's just not the way the Warriors play basketball. Like, a lot of his buckets are his ISO. So can they get Eric Pascal to be a good basketball player? So let's throw that in the list. So it's Andrew Wiggins, Kelly Oubre, James Wiseman, and Eric Pascal.
And let's say this again. Pascal has a 7-foot wingspan. He's 6'6". Oh,
yeah.
He's hyper athletic. They have players with tools to develop. They have the tools that the coaching staff wants, which is long and athletic players. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with them.
You don't just get players that are just like, you're not always going to get extreme IQ players. You just, it's not how it works. You get your Draymonds, you get your Stephs, you get your Clays, and then, you know, you get lucky.
Right.
It's Livingston and Iguodala.
Yeah.
Actually, they traded and got signed those guys. So good for them. But it's like,
you don't normally get Livingston, Iguodala, Draymond, and Bogut and Steph on the same team. All are capable of being the high IQ guy on a team.
Like, even like you look at the Lakers, right? Like, to me, it's like, well, they got KCP and Kuzma, who plays roles on the team. And it's like, those guys aren't geniuses, but they were a big part of why they won the championship, especially KCP, right? And even J.R. Smith, like, those guys, like, they're not geniuses, but it's like, well, you can work with that because they can shoot, they can defend. Like, they do enough of that. And it's like, can you get those guys to play winning basketball with you? You just can't always have. It's like girlfriends, Sam. You can't, just because we have one girlfriend that does this and the next girlfriend is like, you can't have the same thing. Like, it didn't work. You gotta adjust, right? Is what I'm trying to say. And I would be very, I would say this, I guess we can end on a little bit on this. I was a little, I'm optimistic a little bit with Steve Kerr because I think that he just didn't want to play that style with D'Angelo Russell. Can you blame him? Right? It's D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
You know, it's like D'Angelo Russell. Okay. With Steph Curry back and Draymond Green and these athletes, I think he's going to adjust. But again, it's going to be dependent on what we see the first month of the season. But I'm a little optimistic because I do feel like he has those guys and he has Steph Curry at the front. I just don't think you want to play that style when you have someone like, he's just not good to demand that style. He's not good enough to demand that style. And I think they have enough good players to demand that style now.
And we'll get into this over the next month. This has been kind of an emotional week. Like it's, I cannot stress how much of a gut punch it was for us to be that hyped about the draft and then to get the Clay news right before it. Like, I feel bad for James Wiseman too. James Wiseman was about to have the biggest moment of his career, and all anyone can think of is the Clay Thompson news. But we move on. We'll pivot on. We have a month before the season starts. Literally, the season starts in 30 days. Shout out Steph Curry, number 30. And we'll go from there. We'll get into it. We'll do a little more Kelly Oubre analysis in the next week. We'll do a little what we want to see from Wiggins, what we're expecting from Wiseman. We'll get into this. We'll look into all of it because I think it's still an exciting season. Expectations have changed, but this team has potential to make noise in the playoffs. And to me, as long as Steph and Draymond stay healthy, I'm super excited and interested to see what happens with the rest of the roster. Can Kelly Oubre develop? Can Andrew Wiggins develop? What is James Wiseman going to be the next great big man? Or is he, you know, can he be a big piece of the future? Because the Warriors need him to be. We haven't even talked about the Minnesota pick in the draft full of like 4 billion Jaylens. You know, it's all this stuff. It's not the season Warrior fans wanted coming up, in my opinion. The Warrior fans wanted to see Steph, Clay, and Draymond gun for the Lakers to see if they could win it this year after a year off. But, you know, there's still some excitement to be had here.
Yeah, that's the Sam I like to hear. I think this is, I think, it's like, what are you going to do? You can't mope all day long about Clay being out, right? Like, I get it. They're not going to be a championship
team. You log
online,
there are people who can mope all day long.
I mean, that's true. But, you know, it is what it is. There's nothing you can do now. And I think there is, like, I think for the people that are listening, I think there's no issues kind of building yourself up watching this team, especially in the offseason. I think there's a lot of talent here. And I wouldn't be surprised if they end up being a top four team in the West. They may not be the top four team in terms of record, but like I would not be surprised if by the end of the season that the Warriors are one of the four teams left in the Western Conference. Again, I feel like that's a success. But to me, I don't think that that's out of question. I think you have the Clippers there. You have like Ibaka, great pickup, right? Way better than Trez. Then you have the Lakers right there, top of the list. And then beyond that,
you have the Nuggets. They've proven what they've proven.
But to me, still not really. But yeah, go ahead. You were saying, yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, obviously, you know, there's teams like Dallas and
Portland.
God knows what's gonna happen with Houston. Like all these teams where you're like on paper, maybe they're in a better situation. Yep. But I don't think they're unbeatable at this point.
Yep.
And I think there's, you know, it may be a rocky season for the Warriors, but there's upside here. As long as Steph and Draymond stay healthy, for them to be a interesting team.
Yeah, because like you even look at, like I look at the Nuggets and I look at Portland, I think are probably like 3 and 4 up there. Like to me, Houston's like they're going to be gone. And it's like in a playoff series and a best of 7, I don't see any reason why the Warriors can't beat them. They may be underdogs though. They may be. They probably will be. But I don't see a reason why they can't beat them. And that's what makes sports fun. Like that's the point of the shit. It's like we watch it because we want to
believe.
See.
Is We Believe back?
Well, I think they're a little bit too good to be We Believe anymore. But I think, well, here's the thing. I think there's going to be more highlights this season. In terms of like the standard like athleticism highlights, right? Like the highlights we're used to is like transition, ping, ping, ping. Clay shoots a 3. Crowd goes nuts. But I think now we're talking like Steph, dribble drive, and then alley-oop to James Wiseman coming out from the rafters. Like, that's shit we've never seen. Even, like, Wiggins and Oubre.
And then
like,
fake crowd noise goes nuts because there'll be no fans in the stands.
It's just me and you. It'll just be me and you in the stands or, like, however, like, 20% capacity. But I think that's the type of stuff where it's like, yeah, I think we're reaching if the Warriors were a lottery team. Like, last season, if we said this, it would be like, oh, okay, what the fuck are these guys talking about? But we think the Warriors are going to be a playoff team. They should be a playoff. All right, let's end it this here. They should be a playoff team. Sam, do you agree or disagree? They should be a playoff team.
If they stay healthy, they should be a playoff team.
Yeah.
And I hate throwing that caveat in there, but after last year, I have to throw that caveat in there.
I mean, with this team, right? Like, it is. I mean, look at the Lakers. If LeBron's out, I don't care who the fuck they have around. They're going to be an 8 seed or like a 9 seed, right? Like, if LeBron's, God forbid, like he injures himself, like he's done. The Lakers are done. So it's the same thing with the Warriors. If Steph is out, he's done. Even with Draymond Green, like if Draymond Green's done for the season, then it's like, well, now you're fighting for an 8 seed. So I think there's a lot of things to look forward to coming up.
All right, man. We'll be back in another day.